Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Bog right here on Dave Martell YouTube channel. Sorry we've been kind of off and on this past month. Been a rough month for me. COVID, again, stomach virus, we had a trip, car problems, computer problems, inclement weather, thunderstorms. We just had Hurricane Ida, like all kinds of crazy stuff. So it's been a crazy month, so I apologize to all my patrons and to everybody that likes to tune into The Bog every single week. Going forward, we will do a better job of being on time and getting you guys the content that you like. Speaking of the patrons, go to patreon.com/thebog and sign up. If you like The Bog, you want to support The Bog, you want to help us keep the lights on, there's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. You can get a mug, you can get a sticker, and most importantly, you get RSS feed to get audio of every single show that we do to listen to on your commutes, in your car, at the gym, or at work. That is patreon.com/thebog. You want to support The Bog another way, go to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. We got some awesome merch over there, t-shirts, hats, backpacks, dresses for the ladies, onesies for the babies, all kinds of stuff over there. Good stuff made in America. Shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. If you want to support a friend of ours, make sure you go to facebook.com/ironagejodish and check out some authentic ancient Vedic astrology. The stuff is so super cool. You're going to love it. So go to facebook.com/ironagejodish and give him a like, our boy Neil John. And if you decide to get a reading, make sure to let him know that Big Dave sent you. Tell him Big Dave sent you. And I said it was a rough month for my health, for my computer, for all kinds of stuff. However, one good thing this last month, the Bizarre Archives blew it away. Excellent. We like tripled our goal in sales. Bizarre Archives has been a wonderful success, and that is all because of you guys that have been sharing and posting it and buying copies and leaving reviews, and it's just been awesome. Bizarre Archives 2 is coming out very, very soon. We have more stuff coming from the Bizarre Archives, so thank you from the bottom of my heart, from all of our hearts, for your help in making the Bizarre Archives a success. If you have not gotten your copy of Bizarre Archives Issue 1, you better hurry up and get it quick, because Bizarre Archives 2 is going to be coming out very, very soon. You can go to thebizarrearchives.com and check out everything about the Bizarre Archives, as well as a link to purchase your very own copy. So tonight we are going to talk about religion and politics. Last week, I did a show with Miss Swan, and during our show, we were talking about creating culture, and we got on talking about politics. And some folks, I guess, maybe I didn't articulate myself properly, maybe I didn't convey myself the way that I meant to, but some folks got the wrong idea of kind of what I was talking about. And we are going to kind of delve into political opinions versus religious opinions, whether or not they are compatible, whether or not when and where they are compatible, so on and so forth. But we're going to get right into it. But Mr. Tristan, Mr. Andre, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave.
Doing pretty good myself.
Excellent. So during that show we did in the comments section, well, during the show, to give you guys a very brief recap, I went into the idea of political identities, about how politics should be the act of politicking, the act of gaining resources, the act of negotiation with the state, so on and so forth. And that's what I argued is a proper way of going about politics. The improper way of going about politics is assuming a political ideology, political theory as an identity over your inborn, your heritage, over your faith, so on and so forth. So, Mr. Tristan, what is your take on that?
I mean, I think more or less you're pretty accurate there, Dave. I would say that it's not that political ideology in general is just this terrible thing you never touch or anything. It's perfectly fine to agree that some ideology has the correct way of viewing about some issue or another. The issue mostly comes about when that becomes your sole identity and reflective way to view the world, and you start having some sort of cognitive dissonance whenever you're challenged by facts that don't align itself with that ideology, which is almost inevitably going to happen.
Yeah, so I'm trying to bring it up here. My computer's being a piece of junk here. But I got a screenshot from a group called All Pagan Norse and Heathens. I'm going to try to bring it up on the screen here. And this shows exactly what we're talking about when it comes to your politics perverting your religious views or your theological views or your views on faith or worldview as a whole. So, Mr. Tristan, if you could chat him up for a minute here while I bring this image up.
Sure. And this one we're talking about here is actually one of the most prominent kinds you'll see in the various quote-unquote pagan communities. It's what I'd refer to as sort of Wiccan-esque. You'll see here this is a very clear example of a sort of left-wing pagan identitarian corruption, basically, of any sort of legitimate Indo-European faith. Right. Paganism is primitive communism, love, beauty, harmony with nature, equality, and peace.
Oh, my God. That makes my stomach turn.
And the for people who might not be in the know here, the after the heart, it shows like a red flower. The red flower is a symbol used for social democrats on, you know, like Twitter and everything like that. So that's basically what they're aligning them with. We were talking about this earlier in the pre-show ourselves, and Dave had quite a bit of savage commentary to employ here, so I'll let him take it.
Yeah, so first of all, this guy, you don't understand paganism or communism. There's no such thing as primitive communism. Communism presupposes, it implies a solution to capitalism. It requires a it's like the means of production, right? It's like workers gaining the means of production and having ownership over what their labor produces. That is the idea of communism. I'm not saying that communism is good or bad. That is what communists say communism is about, right? So primitive communism makes no damn sense. You can't have communism before there was manufacturing. It's entirely a modern thing. It's based in the materialist dialectic. It's like completely modern. You can't separate modernity and communism. You just can't.
Well, I mean, you can't have communism in a situation in which no one is already alienated from the means of production. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
No, it's ridiculous. A tribe already has ownership of the means of production, you idiot. It's like, when they grow fruit, they're going to eat that fruit. That's owning the means of production, you moron. Without capitalism like in place and manufacturing, you can't like put in communism. You can't like instill communism in, you know, 500 BC. It makes no sense, right?
It needs to be understood that communism is fundamentally a reaction to capitalism.
Exactly.
Just like capitalism was a reaction to feudalism.
Exactly. So we're not advocating for capitalism or communism or anything here. We're just giving the definitions of these ideologies and how this person is effectively like not smart at all. And then they go on to say love, beauty, harmony with nature, equality, and peace. First of all, we've gone over this many, many times. Our ancestors had a caste system. They did not believe in equality at all. They didn't have this universal egalitarian view of the world. They had a very fierce in-group preference. In fact, they had dual morality. They had a caste system. They had a patriarchy. They believed in patrilinealism. It was like, it was as far away from modern ideas of equality as you can even imagine. Peace. Tristan just said something really funny earlier before the show. He said the peace thing is so goofy because you know how many gods we have that are war gods? All of them, right? There's no, they were very big on war. You know what I mean? It was like, It just makes me nuts. And then on top of it, harmony with nature. This person is just presupposing they're talking about, you know, trees and rocks and dirt and dog turds and like just like material nature. Like this is the example of what we're talking about with the danger of letting your politics poison and corrupt an ancient tradition, an ancient spiritual tradition transcends modern ideas. It goes beyond modern ideas. It is into that. You are not beholden to inject your modern political views. So what happens is if you put your political views before your religious ones, which are unchanging, which are based on natural law, which are primordial, which are eternally true and good, and you base it on shifting, formless, changing. Because like Tristan said earlier, not all political political theory is not evil. It is a necessary thing. We have to figure out how to order societies as technology goes forth. We have to figure out who gets what. We have to figure out all kinds of stuff. We got to figure out how to live in society with machines, right? So we got to figure out how to do that. We need to figure out economic plans, what trade means. You know, we have to figure out the value of things. Political theory is necessary in reality. It just is. The problem,
so long as we're people, we're going to need to figure out how to organize people.
Exactly. As long as we are people and we don't like get into this transhumanism and turn into weird hairless, sexless mole people that like obey some sort of singularity AI unit that or whatever. As, like, before we become techno slaves, transhumanist techno slaves.
Yeah. Privileges like for all of eternity.
Yeah, exactly. But as long as we are people, we have to figure out how to organize people. The point that I'm making here is that political theory in and itself is necessary. It's not evil. The problem, like this goofy picture, this screenshot of this goofy person, the problem with allowing it to become your identity is then you begin to inject it into things that are traditional and unchanging and eternally true. And that ain't it.
Really, in the term of having a tradition is supposed to be unyielding. Like, this is the way we did it. We do it this way because that's the way we have done it before. You cannot change tradition because then it no longer really becomes tradition anymore.
Exactly. If the tradition, but here, okay. So my point that I'm making, I'm kind of all over the place tonight. But the point that I'm making is, these political theories, they will change as society changes, as technology changes, as nations reorganize themselves. And I don't mean nations in the true sense. I mean nations as in the modern sense, right? Somebody said up here, let me see. They said, I see no separation in these. Nation is the politics. Nation is the philosophy. Nation is the religion. I would disagree with that. Well, it depends what you mean by nation. Seven Serpents, define what you mean by nation, and then we can talk about it. Michael says, a nation should be viewed as an organism, not an organization. Exactly. That's exactly true. So as nations change, as technology evolves, as things in reality change, we will need to evolve new and changing political theories. So to adopt that as an identity is problematic and heretical to a tradition. If you do not do this, you are not a traditionalist.
Yeah, you know what? I'd just like to double down on the fact that it's just straight up heretical. If you're changing elements of your religious belief in order to make it conform to what you think is your social and political ideals, then you're a heretic. You're a blaspheming heretic, and that's all it is to it. And quite frankly, you're probably not even actually legitimately religious, or at some point in time, you would have thought, I don't know, man, maybe I shouldn't change what the gods have told me is the truth, because I think I know better.
A massive point that I'd like to bring up is... when it comes to things like politics is it's just a fact. It's a part of reality. That's just how people have done it. Our ancestors did politics themselves. But my issue mainly stems from hardcore ideology. Because when you have a hardcore ideology that you try to center your entire worldview and your life and religion and so forth around, you are basically pledging allegiance to a materialist system that will automatically prevent you from actually swearing allegiance to a religion, which is not a material or a material thing. It's far beyond that. It's far greater than that. And having an ideology prevents you from seeing religion in a non-material way. Like, you always see it in a materialistic manner. How can I change this to suit my needs and my views, and how can I use that as a tool to try and shape and manage the society around me, rather than actually doing what the religion dictates you to do, as tradition tells you to do.
Yeah. It's a problem with modernity. It's like people, I say this a lot, like a lot of these people that claim that they're nationalists or traditionalists or whatever, they're nationalists and traditionalists and fascists until it's time to bend a knee to the authority, and then all of a sudden they become libertarians. And when it's just a problem in modernity that people are just going to virtue signal. They have a problem with obeying. They have a problem with submitting. They have a problem with something transcending and being having power and authority over their feelings and their desires and their wants as, like, you know, individuals or whatever.
We have to understand that when we're talking about these old societies, it's really hard, if not impossible, to actually truly understand, if you look at it from a ideological or political lens, how these people even function. As most of these, I guess if we use the example of like the hardcore nationalist fascist guy.
Hey, are you guys still there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Yeah, sorry, but I'm having.
Yeah, I think we're broken up a bit.
I'm having some connectivity issues.
I guess, like, using another example that's been done to death, but it's always fun to bring up because it really boils it down to the most basic concept. These, I guess, they're usually right-wing, but I've seen it in left-wing circles as well, this idea that Christianity is bad because they have authority, and, you know, our faith does not have authority because you're equal to the gods, and therefore you don't kneel for the gods. When I'm pretty sure Tristan can pull out 3,000 separate sources right now on where they kneel in front of gods and submit themselves completely, because that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a clinical reaction to any sort of authority or rules or structure, and they are only pagans in the sense that they believe that they have somehow found a way to justify their belief in being anti-authority.
It's also a nice aesthetic.
Yeah,
a lot of these people are just in it for the aesthetic of it.
I mean, to be fair, not everyone who believes this is necessarily doing that. Some people have just been tricked, or they're ignorant, basically. Like, it's been so prominent for so long that people who could have the best intentions have been legitimately fooled by this.
Yeah, 7-8 years
ago. Yeah, of course,
ago,
we're not chastising them.
7-8 years ago, I thought that. You know, it's just like what you get taught. And a lot of people that say they believe that, they don't actually believe that. They just think that they're following the religion, right? They were just taught incorrectly. And so when you teach them and you show them the sources, this is right. Most people aren't being nefarious. They're just trying to do a good job to follow their faith. But there are quite a few people that, regardless of what you say to them, they're just libertarians wearing a costume. They're just liberals wearing a costume. That's all that they are. They're postmodernists that like to wear tunics.
They also like being outside a lot. That's it. That's pretty much as far as it goes. And that's a massive problem in a lot of these communities. I mean, if you look up like these typical, you know, in quotation marks, heathen groups on Facebook, you're going to find everything. And it's just so pervasive to see so many people being outright confused about what's being said. And most of these groups are just sharing funky archaeological facts or posting bad LARP pictures and not actually about theology. And once you're actually in a discussion about theology, there's always a few bad apples that try to absolutely control the conversation to try and mend it and merge it in such a way that it sounds like it agrees with their ideology.
Yeah. I mean, I've never actually been inside of a heathen Facebook group that what we wasn't already constructed by us and that actually talked about theology ever. It's basically just like pictures of get-togethers or memes with like the words on them of some quote that probably isn't even real.
Yeah, but to be fair, that's how, you know, all groups are. That's just how people are. Like, you go to a Christian group, it's literally like just like memes of Jesus with, you know, liberal crap, right? That's all that it ever is. So it's not something that's unique to us. It's just a problem in modernity that religiosity is very insincere. So there's a couple of good spots in the chat here I want to hit on. My boy Project Destagnation says ideologies themselves are cults. Makes no sense to follow two cults when you're assuming you're following one. Very based. Teutonic Resistance TV says, I would think paganism is the opposite of communism. So, it depends what we're talking about here. Here's the problem with saying, like, putting paganism or heathenry on a spectrum with communism is that they are two complete. It's like apples and oranges, right? Heathenry is an ancestral tradition, is an ancestral religious tradition, whereas communism is, as Tristan said, is a reaction to capitalism. It is an economic analysis, right? It's an economic theory. It's kind of hard to, because heathenry has absolutely nothing to do with manufacturing or technology or modernity at all, and then that's what communism entirely has to do with. So,
I mean, there are elements of communism that are incompatible with the faith, like its function on materialism. If you assume a sort of secular outlook that there are no supernatural forces in existence, obviously that's incompatible. Yeah. Its assumptions with like equality and the reduction of any sort of hierarchical standards to human living is completely incompatible, because our faith has a caste system, hierarchically baked into the faith. But most people, when they talk about things like, well, heathenry isn't compatible with communism, what they really mean is like the economic idea of how we should structure things versus capitalism. And no, that part is not accurate. There's no part of the heathen faith that says you can't be a socialist or a capitalist.
Yeah.
I want to bring up one thing here, is that when people talk about things like, oh, paganism is inherently communist, or this is inherently capitalist, a lot of people also tend to misunderstand this, and this is also a product of modernity, is that when people think of communism in like a pagan way, they think of this is a tribe of people who worship old gods, but they also share stuff. And if you share stuff, you're a communist. If you do trade, you're a capitalist. Like, it's a very dualistic way of seeing the world. A lot of people just tend to understand basic commerce as capitalism. Capitalism is very well defined, as is communism. So saying if you share something, you're a communist, and if you have a business, you're a capitalist, is a very reductionist and very simple-minded way of seeing things.
Right. Most people mistake the free market for capitalism, and that's not the case. And then there's the grand meme of communism is when the government does things.
Yeah. Disband the BBC says pagans, unlike communists, very rarely, if at all, sacrifice humans.
Oh,
I thought that was funny. So, when it comes to, so back to the original question, paganism being on the spectrum with communism, it's like apples and oranges. You're mostly like a lot of the crux of communism and traditional Marxism and stuff like that is not compatible with heathenry, as Tristan said, because heathenry has an inherent hierarchy. It is there's a slave caste in our history. Marxists would like pass out if you told them you had communist slave caste. That's not compatible with at all. I'm not saying we're trying to go out and enslave people or anything like that, but heathenry historically had a caste system, and that's just completely against communism. But on the flip side, then you have more nationalist stuff, and that's another. It's like, you talk about fascism, you talk about nationalism, you talk about these. these types of ideologies in forms of government and stuff like that. They also have some stuff that's compatible with heathenry, and then they have some stuff that's either says nothing about, it's a complete gray area, and then you probably have some stuff in there that's not compatible either. So it's just like these to like put heathenry or paganism and ancestral spiritual traditions on a spectrum with political ideologies is just hard, right? It's just, it's like, are we talking about the laws that are put forth by the religion? Are we talking about the people in the past that practice the religion? Like, what are we talking about here? It's like, it's a big mess. You know what I mean?
I'll just say and make the case that it's literally not possible to do so. You cannot compare a political ideology and a religion. They're not on the same spectrum. They're on a completely different spectrum.
Yeah, it's a completely different spectrum. It's
to say that paganism is anything with a political ideology is might strike some people to confuse them effectively. I mean, think of it like using a more a religion that more people are familiar with, like saying you cannot be a liberal if you are a Catholic. Obviously, there are lots of Catholic liberals. There are lots of Catholic fascists. Being a Catholic doesn't presuppose a political ideology, and it's the same way for the Germanic faith.
Now, I will say this, authoritarian third position political ideologies have much more in common with the traditional European, Indo-European religions than other ideologies do. But Project Destagnation says, like I said that last stream, politics is downstream from faith. He's right. That's why, like, I just say that I'm a theocrat. Whatever is good for the folk, whatever is good that serves the gods, whatever brings us prosperity and victory is something that I'm willing to look at. You could tell me that, you could just throw a completely brand new word of a political theory at me and say, this is going to serve the gods, and I'll open it up and read it, and whatever. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, I think largely speaking, that's the best way to approach these things. Anything that supports what the gods would find acceptable and what supports the folk is what is ultimately the correct political arrangement.
Yeah.
Ask, what can I change in this religion to suit my politics? And instead ask, how can my politics serve my religion?
Exactly. Exactly. And the reason that it's so problematic is, like, where we show on the screen here, you know, it's like if your political ideology becomes your identity, then you start to pervert things that are eternal, right? Your political ideology is not eternal. That's going to change in 30, 40 years, right? This is eternal.
Your life is eternal. Your soul is eternal. You shouldn't throw that away for some materialistic political ideology.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily say the soul is eternal, but it's very long-lived. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It's a poetic term.
So we're going to go to halftime. We got the Folkish Farmer is going to be coming back very, very soon. So to hearken his return, we are going to play a rerun from our boy, the Folkish Farmer. I want to see what he's got up here. So we're going to see what Folkish Farmer is cooking, and then we'll be right back.
Hello and welcome to the Kitchen of the Folkish Farmer. Today we're going to talk about deer. Deer are super important to our ancestors. Tacitus wrote in Germania in 23, the drink is a liquor prepared from barley and wheat, brought fermentation to resemble that of wine. Those border on the Rhineland also purchased wine. Wine was something that they enjoyed as well, but couldn't really grow. Their food is simple. It's wild fruits, fresh venison, and milk. They satisfy hunger without seeking the elegance and delicacies of that at the table. So Tacitus was talking about all these fancy foods from Rome. Now, deer is super important also with regards to what could be done with its bones, the hides, the antlers, and so on. In the Viking culture, specifically in Scandinavia, they made a lot of spoons and eating utensils out of the bones of the deer. Now, the Germanic people also did this as well. The Germanic people in continental Germany used a lot of the deer bones to create knife handles and so on. Deer is really woven into the fabric of our mythology as well. If you look at the Poetic Edda, the male red deer eats amongst the branches of the world tree, and there's actually several references to this. Also in Valhalla, there's a stag that is standing at the presence of the divine in Valhalla as well. So deer is something that's super important to our people, and I wanted to give you guys today a very simple recipe. A lot of people are intimidated by deer. I hear it all the time. Well, it has a very gamey flavor, those kind of things. We're going to take that gamey flavor out. We're going to Okay, guys, I just brought this back from browning it up. It's got a really nice browned up look here to it. Looks very good. So what I've got in here is celery, carrots, onions, and apples with garlic. So I've got that already chopped up in here. I'm going to go ahead and dump this in here. And the nice thing about using cast iron is it does stay relatively warm, so that I can kind of saute this around a little bit before I add anything else to it. So I'm just going to kind of add that in there and let that kind of cook down. Cast iron will retain some heat. That's why I like using cast iron a lot. So I'm going to put this back. Now, the next thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to add some port, or I'm going to add some red wine. It doesn't really matter. I use wonderful cheap Porto. You can get this for like $10, $15. It's extremely cheap. I just want to use about that much. So if you're wondering, it's probably about 3/4 a cup, something like that. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to add 2 or 3 bay leaves. So I've got 2 there, add 1 more bay leaf in there, and then I'm going to add some juniper berries. Juniper berries are used a lot in German cooking, so I'm going to add about 5 juniper berries there. You don't want to add too many, or you'll end up tasting like basically a juniper plant, but you do want to give it that nice aromatic flavor. And then the next ingredient that I'm going to put in here is some cinnamon. The cinnamon will give it a nice warm flavor, probably about maybe a teaspoon of cinnamon. Just kind of get that all through there. And I put a little bit on top of the meat as well. And then I'm going to add back a little bit more salt into it here. Now at this point, what I'm going to do is I'm going to add the bone broth. I've had bone broth cooking pretty much all week. If you guys have been listening to the way I cook, I pretty much have bone broth going at all times. So this is actually from lamb bones, but it really doesn't matter. It could be from beef bones, chicken bones, whatever. It's just going to give it a nice flavor. So what I'm going to do is take my little strainer here. I'm just going to kind of put it right over this right here so that I don't get any large chunks or anything like that. You have to kind of move the meat over a little bit, but it's fine. Right there. And then I'm just going to pour some of this broth directly through that strainer so it catches any kind of chunks. And I'm going to fill this up pretty much till it covers all but just a little portion of the meat there. Good. Put this back on to continue simmering for the rest of the week. Add this in here. What's nice is that whatever you captured there, just dump it right back in. No problem. Sweep that there. Just go ahead and kind of chop up the rest of these little pieces here. Stir those in there. Now, while chopping this up, essentially what you're going to do with this is you're going to put it in the oven at 325 for about 8 hours. And yes, you did hear me right on that, about 8 hours. The reason being is deer does not have a lot of fat on it. Deer is one of the leanest animals that I've ever seen in my entire life. One thing that could be leaner is possibly elk, and it's in the same family. So what we're going to do from here now is we're going to take this, we're going to put it uncovered in the oven at 325 for about 8 hours. Once that's done, I'll show you guys what it looks like. And thanks for watching.
All right. Thank you, Folkish Farmer. That looks so good. We brought that one up because we got deer seasons coming up very soon. So I wanted to throw up a deer cooking video there. The Folkish Farmer will be back with us very, very soon. Our boy Mike, Michael Barons in the chat says, Dave just became a supporter on Patreon, as it seems YouTube is bog unfriendly. Hail all bog dwellers and up. Hail to you, Mr. Michael. Thank you so much for your very kind support. And hail to all of the bog lords and bog dwellers and all the folks that support us on Patreon. Chris Crawford says, they are both worldviews, though. I consider communism a religion, a stupid one, but one nonetheless. They are both worldviews, and they aren't, you know, they compete. It's not a vacuum, right? The religious people with religious intention will compete with people in political intention, because there's only so much of reality, right? Reality is one place. We don't exist in different vacuums. So, Mr. Tristan, we have some stuff that we wanted to knock out here in the second half, to talk about some of the ways that modern politics are not compatible with heathenry at all, and this is going to probably be pretty good for everybody listening. Mr. Tristan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, very good. And I've been having some internet trouble, so I'm sorry about that, folks. So you wanted to talk about things like universalism, right?
Universalism would be a very good one to start with, because it's one of the ones that are so prominent in the faith that we see it everywhere, right? Like, we can literally divide sects and segments up into whether or not they are universalistic or folkish. And universalism is effectively just the idea that the Germanic faith is open to every single person on the planet, regardless of their background or heritage. This is a sort of evangelicalist position that is not compatible with the actual tribalist views of our own ancestors, in which the gods are literally our own ancestors personally. There's no real distinction between the Germanic culture, the Germanic language, the Germanic people, and the Germanic faith. We're all considered a single composite whole. You can't be, in the same way that today you can be like a Japanese Catholic, you can't be a Japanese Germanic heathen. It's just functionally impossible. And these people attempt to basically take things they've learned from Christianity or other Abrahamic faiths, or most commonly just liberalist assumptions, and imbue them into the faith itself.
Yeah, it says Germanic in the title. So, universalism, and it goes far beyond just the universalist view of universalism, which is effectively just like liberalism rebranded, right? It's just universalism with a Mjolnir around its neck. It's just liberalism with a Mjolnir around its neck. Universalism is heretical. It just is. There's just too many sources. It says it in the Poetic Edda that, and here's the thing that universalists will do. They will hold up stanza 127 from the Havamal, which they purposely mistranslate to serve their narrative. And they'll hold that up as the reason why they do what they do. And then if you bring up, well, in Voluspa, it says specifically that the gods give us the gift of our hair, blood, and good complexion, or godly complexion, Like he's saying that our features are gifts from the gods. Our complexion as Europeans is a gift from the gods. And then they'll shift, or and then you bring up Rigsthula and all the stuff that Rigsthula says. And then they'll say, oh, well, that was just, you know, it's just written by Christians. We can't do everything that the ancient people did, blah, 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 blah. It's like it either is or it isn't. They only follow the source material, the lore, and the sacred text when it suits their political aims. That's all that it is. When it doesn't suit their political aims, they throw it in the trash and talk about how it's not an authority, right? So these people, they are just heretical by nature. Universalism is a heresy.
Yeah, and to go on to the sort of right-wing identity standpoint for this, the cognate position would be a focus on racial materialism and white identity politics. We've talked about this extensively in the past, so I won't really delve deep into it, but effectively, the idea of the entire religion being a racial construct in a material sense is also not supported in the Germanic faith. Our faith is patrilineal, and they accepted that people might marry other people or other women from different cultures, and that their children would be of the Germanic culture, heritage, and faith. The idea of racial materialism in the modern sense, like blacks, Asians, and white people, didn't even exist during the time in which our religion was actually practiced by their ancestors.
They didn't even know those people existed.
Right. Well, I mean, not only did they not know that they existed, is the categories themselves did not exist, which is a very long argument in itself, because some people don't seem to realize that these aren't actually objective existing things that just are real.
To them, when Tristan says that they would marry like a woman from another culture, he's talking about they would take Celts and Slavs and like so on and so forth. They weren't taking.
I mean, not entirely. Like we have examples of them taking a Hunnic woman who would have been like steppe tribe people, like Mongolianish, Turkish kind of things, and they were married into very high caste, the ruling societies of people in Germania itself during the 300s and 400s, I believe.
But then again, this is not an argument for wanton universalism and multiculturalism and depicting African and stuff like that.
Right, that is also completely unacceptable, and I mean, it's a very complicated topic to get into, but effectively there is a middle way here that follows what is in fact Germanic and what isn't Germanic, and without considering some sort of materialist heresy of modern science effectively.
Yeah. So it's a complicated topic. It really is. Would our ancestors advocate for these people and what they're doing? Probably not. If they saw that there were countries that had open borders and they had what they have on our commercials, and I don't want to get too far into it because it's just like instant ban on YouTube. But you guys know what I'm saying. Our ancestors wouldn't be cool with what's going on now. They had no concept of what people were doing now. So what Tristan's getting at isn't necessarily that we should go be multiculturalist, whatever. What he's saying is that our ancestors didn't have a concept for it. So there's not they didn't understand it. They didn't know these other people existed for the most part. So they didn't have rules for it, right? So we shouldn't take that as, well, they didn't have rules, so that means that we have to do it and we have to bend a knee to liberalism. That's not what we're saying. But,
well, I mean, just on that topic, we'll go back to something in liberalism that is very popular in modern society, and which is completely incompatible with the faith, and that's sexuality identities. Like, the Germanic faith
here
does not allow
man
you
hammer
to be. Right? I'll try to talk around it. In the Germanic faith, things like homosexuality and transsexuality and other identities of this sort are not considered to be acceptable. Maybe that'll get us around the YouTube ban
that was,
on that.
You didn't talk around it at all. You just straight said it.
I don't think that'll do it, Dave. We'll be fine. I've said far worse.
Yeah, who cares? I'm thinking we're gonna go over to Odyssey pretty soon anyways. YouTube is just too stinks, right? But no, Tristan's absolutely right. These ideas of love is love and blah, 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 and you know, all this, the Rainbow Coalition, they would have gotten chucked in bogs. Like, that's all there is to it.
There was a solution to this. It was the bog.
Oh, yeah. And then also included in this, you said gender identities and roles.
Yeah, the Germanic faith has very predefined roles for men and women, and part of behaving as a correct man and woman is actually part of the metaphysics of the faith itself. To not do so is a sign that your soul is effectively corrupted. You can't be effeminate as a Germanic man. It's not acceptable. It's effective. There's a word for it. It's called ergi, and it's effectively sort of like a sin would be in Abrahamic faiths.
Yeah, yeah. To as Tristan was talking about, there was a spiritual element, a metaphysical element to behaving correctly as masculine or feminine, as a man or woman, as you were born a man or woman. If our ancestors were alive today, oh my God, I don't even know what they would do. They would probably have heart attacks if they saw the stuff that was going on now. So
yeah, I feel like they'd probably just go into like mass slaughter trying to just kill everyone.
Oh, Tristan, you can't be talking about that on YouTube. Come on, bub. I'm going to talk around it. It would be mass slaughter.
I didn't say that we should mass slaughter. I just said, you know, if our ancestors were alive today, that's probably the reaction they'd have.
Okay, so next up is individualism.
Yeah, individualism is another one of these things that you see in very liberal currents, and this one crosses over very hard between both left-wing and right-wing sources. So, our ancestors believed in a very collectivist society and a collectivist model for their own spirituality. Even the soul itself is not composed of just a singular element that makes up you. It's composed of multiple elements, some of which actually belong strictly to your family instead of you as an individual. In some ways, in speaking, the Germanic people viewed reality a lot closer to what we would say modern day Asian cultures do, where they speak of themselves first as like their family name and then talk about themselves as individuals. And that's very similar to how they would have viewed themselves in the ancient past. Our ancestors fundamentally viewed themselves as part of a clan, a kinship network, a family, a tribal element, and only then as an individual within that.
Yeah, and so you have also in here, and I think it's going to be interesting, this is a little spicy, so folks, buckle up, this is a little spicy, nationalism as part of the faith itself.
Yeah, nationalism is what is effectively a modernist political feature. You know, we've discussed that all about the entire time today, so we won't have to go too deep into that. But effectively, some people on the right believe that the religion supports nationalism and that they are pagans because they are nationalists and vice versa. That is a corruption of the faith and leads to very heinous outcomes and beliefs and structures. The religion itself is not nationalism itself. Nationalism might be compatible with the religion in some cases or belief structures, but they're not necessarily the same thing, and they don't just support each other.
Well, how are you defining nation? This is there was a comment earlier. A guy said nation is religion or something like that, and it depends on how you define nation. How do you define nation, Tristan?
Generally, I'm talking about the modern nation state, which is effectively just a government. We could talk about this as in like patriotism or something of that sort, right? There is another definition of nation in which it's more like the self-identity constituent blocks of people that come together with a shared heritage and language, culture, and religion, that sort of thing. Strictly speaking, the Germanic people are themselves a singular nation, and their religion is identical to the nation itself. But that's very different from modern political nationalism and the sorts of political ideas and currents that would come about in nationalist politics. That's what I'm discussing, is modern nationalist politics.
You're talking about magic soil nationalism. Like the liberal,
something of that sort. The liberal civil economy. Nationalism.
Civil nationalism, which is the idea that everybody who lives on within these borders is the same in the country. This is our identity. That's not what they viewed. They didn't even have countries are political constructs. Nationalism, that civic nationalism, is a modern political construct. It has nothing to do with heathenry. Heathens, Germanics, viewed themselves as a nation or a thjod. Actually, the word nation comes from the Latin word natio, which means to be born of. So it has everything to do with blood, shared blood, and not everything. Now, this isn't just to say that you should say F my country and become against your country. You know, borders need to be there. Without borders, you don't have order. You don't have a country. You know, you should support borders. You should support your country and be proud of your country and all that stuff. There's nothing at all wrong with that. But civic nationalism, in regards to how it's compatible with the proper Germanic heathenry, is a different matter. Within heathenry, you are obligated to view your fellow heathens, your fellow Germanic heathens, as part of your nation. So if I have to choose between Andre, who's from Norway, he's a Germanic heathen from Norway, and some goofball or whatever down the street from me, I'm going to side with Andre, just because me and him are part of the heathen nation. We are part of the Thjod, no matter where we are. And this is how our ancestors viewed it as well. They didn't see, and this also crossed culture lines as well. For example, this tribe and this tribe and this tribe and this tribe, who all kind of speak a slightly different language. They might have different regional differences and so on and so forth. They view themselves as one people versus like Rome or, the freaking, the Berbers or like somebody like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's largely what we're getting at here. It's also worth noting that a nation is not really identical to a country. For instance, when 1,000 years ago, back when our ancestors were practicing the faith, modern countries didn't even exist as sort of representative blocks. Really, the idea of nationalism as being a state that represents the interests of its nation in a representative political fashion is a function of modernist political thought and just simply didn't exist for our ancestors. They didn't have democracies where they all went, yes, we're all the Germanic people and this is our country and this is how we're going to make policies. The people who ruled and who they were loyal to was like a specific king of this territory over here, and they were all part of the Germanic people under that.
Disband the BBC says civic nationalism is the misconception that if I move to China for 6 months, I become Chinese. Yes, that is civic nationalism. Seven Serpents, he's clarifying what he meant by nation. Nation equals folk / born of. That line of descendants goes all the way back to the gods. Yes, I would agree with that. All right, so we are coming up on an hour, fellas. Mr. Tristan, did you want to hit anything else before we shut it down on this very spicy episode of The Bog?
No, I think we pretty much hit everything. There's basically just the tiniest fragments we could talk about. We'll have to save that for maybe another episode sometime.
Yeah. So, excellent show, guys. Good talk. Let me see if I have anything else. Nope, nothing else for tonight. That's going to be it for this evening. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into The Bog tonight, which is live here on Dave Martell YouTube channel for now until we move over to Odyssey. I think we're going to go to Odyssey. YouTube is just junk, and they just keep getting worse and worse with their connection problems and so on and so forth. But go or check us out on Odyssey. We are on Odyssey. Follow me on Telegram at t.me/theboglord. If you like the bog, you support the bog, you want to help us keep the lights on, go to patreon.com/thebog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50, and you get a sticker, you can get a mug, and most importantly, you get RSS feed to get the audio of every single show that we do to listen to in your car, on your commutes, at the gym, or at work. That is patreon.com/thebog. If you want to support us another way, you can go to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop and pick up some sweet merch over there at shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. Hats, shirts, backpacks, dresses for the ladies, onesies for the babies, bog merch. Go check it out. You can also check out our friend at facebook.com/ironagejodish. Check out some authentic ancient Vedic astrology. The stuff is so super cool. Go over there, give him a like, and if you decide to get a reading over there, make sure to tell him Big Dave sent you. Tell him Big Dave sent you. Also, the Bizarchives. You like the Bizarchives? Make sure to leave us a review, man. If you loved your copy, go tell us about your favorite story, all that kind of stuff. But if you haven't got your copy of Bizarchives yet, you got to pick it up, because Bizarchives 2 is coming up very, very fast. We're working on it. Almost done. So go to thebizarchives.com. That is thebizarchives. .com and check it out. We also talk about Pulp Fiction, the history of Pulp Fiction, Criteria, if you want to submit a story, all that kind of stuff. Check it out, thebizarchives.com. And finally, I'd like to raise a horn to our most exalted patrons. That is going to be our friend Mr. Corey and our very own Andre. Hail to them, and hail to each and every one of you bog lords and bog maidens out there that support us and help us keep on the air and all that good stuff. We got so much more stuff coming your guys' way, but that's going to be it for this evening. And many hails and many blessings. And to those of you that were in the path of Hurricane Ida, man, I'm up in the Northeast. I'm very, very fortunate in that we didn't get a whole lot of stuff here, but I know a lot of friends that are in North Jersey and New York and New England, and a lot of our friends down south, Louisiana, so on and so forth, are going through some tough times, man. So everybody, keep your folk in your prayers, and hopefully that they and their wonderful, beautiful families are safe and sound, and didn't get hit too hard by this horrible catastrophe. Many hails and blessings to them, and I'll see you guys next week, okay? Hail. This episode of The Bog was brought to you by Jotunheim Nutrition. Stop giving your money to the multinational globalist vampires that hate your guts, and give your money to somebody that cares about you, loves you, and makes good quality products for you so you can get big and strong in the Temple of Iron. The best whey in America. I use it. All of my friends use it. We love it. It's excellent stuff. There's many good products over there, but don't take my word for it. Go over there and take a look at his reviews. All 5 stars. Everybody swears by this stuff. Organic, non-GMO, great stuff. JotunheimNutrition.com.